Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, we're doing it old school. No video. No one will be able to comment on our appearance today. What we're wearing, how we look, it's just going to be our dulcet tones.
I'm back to the chaps that I always wear.
Your buttless chaps.
Yeah. Is there another kind?
There's nothing like talking hockey in a pair of chaps. Don't forget your boots, your pink cowboy boots.
I got them right here.
Delightful. Dude, ever since we shot that video, the Sharks are on a streak, dude. And it's the video.
Yeah, I'm sure that's
what
it is. It was
the video that did it.
It was the video.
The ups and downs, the highs and lows, and now we're on an epic high. Logan Couture, who needs him?
Yeah.
Tomas Hertl, who needs him?
Nobody.
All we need is a Raya Hayes and a six-pack of Pabst.
That's right.
And we've got good times.
And Matt Tennyson on the bench.
Matt Tennyson. Not even Matt Tennyson. Taylor Doherty.
Well, now Taylor Doherty.
Is up in the press box. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, dude. We've got the four wins from last week. We've got the emergence of a superstar in Joe Pavelski.
Mm-hmm.
We have the article about Dan Boyle, which actually provided a lot of great insight into his recovery from his injury in St. Louis. And then we've got to look forward to some upcoming games. See, we got to talk about the Vancouver-Calgary line brawl.
Yeah, that was nice.
We'll talk about that. And I want to talk about the point system. There was a nice article on ESPN about the point system, dude. But where should we start?
Look at you with all your notes.
Well, I thought we'd be videotaping. I want to look prepared.
Well, we'll videotape again. Let's start with that, because that was obviously the news in terms of the podcast last week for Dudes on Hockey. We got a good number of views on the video. We got a lot of nice comments. People seemed to like the video. One guy had the comment of the week saying, "I think I'll go back to picturing you guys the way I did before I knew what you look like."
Oh, wow.
I knew my mom listened, but I didn't think she watched.
I got to say, I'm offended, and I kind of want to know what I look like in your mind.
Yeah.
Like, what did I look like?
George Clooney?
Was I like a George Clooney, or maybe a little less Jonah Hill?
Seth Rogen-ish?
Yeah, Seth Rogen-ish, or are we like Liam Neeson?
Yeah.
Do it.
Liam Neeson.
Do it.
I'm a greengrocer. We're closed.
Dude.
Sorry, I want to play that whole scene right now, but I'm not going to. I know there's like two listeners that know what we're talking about, and it's going to be gold for them, but death for everyone else.
I wanted to improv.
I want to do wacky characters.
I'm really good at making lists.
All right.
Well, let's talk about hockey.
Anyway, some people told us to use a tripod, actually. Yeah, a couple people told us to use a tripod.
You didn't like the gravity effect? That was my favorite part about videotaping, actually, was watching Chris float weightlessly in air.
Dude, you teach a film class. What does this all mean?
Well, it's very Kubrick, dude. The whole thing is very Kubrick. And, you know, at any point, you'll be doing a monologue in your panties like Nicole Kidman in Eyes Wide Shut.
Actually, you know, I like the hand. I got to be honest, though. I'm no film critic and I'm no film student. But I do like the handheld look because I don't want it to look like C-SPAN. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just, dude, like the one static camera, one shot. Annoying, you know, just a pivot. This isn't supposed to look like, a professionally produced show.
It was fun, dude. It was fun. It's something we'll do every now and then.
I'm going to stick with the handheld, though.
Sure. Well, it's whatever the camera talent wants.
He's got way too much equipment. He's got more equipment than he knows what to do with. He'll do whatever we want. But I think I'm going to stay away from the tripod. I like the handheld a little bit better.
I do miss the lighting.
Yeah. And the sweating because of the lighting.
Let's talk about the Sharks, dude.
All right.
Dude, we're on a 4-game win streak. We don't even know what to do with ourselves.
Ho-hum. They're going to start losing any second.
Well, let's go back to the beginning, dude. The three-game road trip, the game in Washington, their mm-hmm. first game on the trip, a 2-1 shootout win.
Yeah. Sharks are awful good in the shootout this year. I don't know if I like that or not.
Well, we'll talk about that more when we get into the point debate, you know, in terms of the standings and, you know, supposedly at the GM meetings, they're going to bring up the idea of 3 points for a regulation win and 2 points for an overtime shootout win.
Right.
But a win in the first game of a road trip, well, it was not pretty. I mean, they got it done against a team in Washington that's not very good, but a win is a win in the first game of an East Coast swing. You take it. You absolutely take it. And that was sort of the beginning of the Pavelski off, right?
I mean,
well, he's been hot for quite a while, but that road trip, I mean, he totally exploded.
Yeah. He's now second in the league in goals. Right. He's just absolutely in fuego, this guy. And, I mean, he's playing up on, you know, a higher line than I know the coach has intended, but that's because we have so many guys that are hurt. And Pavs is clearly... you know, making the most of that situation, although not like he would ever be hurting for ice time in any situation.
Sure, but let's jump right into this then. It has the success of Pavelski now in this. He's always been a good player, a 60-point player, but now we're seeing a glimpse of, with Joe Thornton, what this could be, a 40-plus goal scorer.
Yeah.
Is this creating a different kind of problem for the Sharks deeper down the lineup as we advance into the season? I mean, you can't, when Couture gets back, you're not going to move him back down.
Pavelski?
Yeah. You can't. How could you move him down?
Well, I mean, Couture was on the second line anyway with Marlowe.
Right. But won't that sort of, you don't think that will have any sort of change in
terms
of...
You'd move down Wingles.
So move down Wingles, and so now your third line is Wingles and...
Exactly.
Who? I mean, Desjardin and...
Yeah, Bracken Kern.
I mean,
whatever.
So you're just... While they're winning, I'm not advocating to move him down. I think you can't. I think you're kind of almost in... While the sample size is small, you're getting close to almost like a Brent Burns-ish type scenario where... It was working too good. You can't change it now.
See, I disagree. I think you have to move him back down. I think when you play against the top teams in the West in a playoff situation, you can't have two lines that are throwaway lines and expect to win a series.
No, I agree. You can't have two throwaway lines. So you're just going to have to address that.
You think they would address it via trade? I mean, yes. We've seen how Pavelski and Torres can play together. Those guys get
healthy.
But
that changes his role completely. And now he's not a finisher. Now he's the pivot in the middle.
But that's one of the great things about Joe Pavelski. He can play any situation. He's not going to thrive in only one situation the way we've seen so many other players in the league. This guy can play well and make a good contribution in so many different situations.
So as the Sharks get deeper with Torres' return, you think... A Wingles Torres Pavelski line is too tempting to pass up, and that you just find someone else to play. You move Tyler Kennedy up to the top line?
I think so.
Okay.
I think you do something like that. Or, I mean, I guess we'll talk about Havlat, although maybe he's
a healthy scratch by all accounts. Okay. You know, on Monday, supposedly not on IR anymore, as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not healthy. Fully 100%, but healthy enough to be a option to play. As far as what I understood, they chose to not play him.
Right. Now, and it could just be a situation where he's technically okay to play, but given his injury history, they're not just going to throw him back in the lineup.
Right.
Not when you have, you know, such superstars as Uriah Hayes.
Right. Well, the thing is right now, the way the team's going, you're not, why would you change it?
Yeah, you wouldn't.
Like, I mean, you wouldn't change it.
And I mean,
right?
You know, Ryan Hayes is nice
working.
It's a nice punchline, but the fact is the kid's playing decent. He's not playing bad at all.
He's in the Bracken Kearns mold.
Yes.
He doesn't make mistakes. I mean, he doesn't do anything spectacular, but he'll hit, he'll play solid defense, and he doesn't make errors that are noticeable to a hockey fan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't notice anything. He doesn't stand out either way, which you, sometimes you need to have a couple guys like that. Mm-hmm. A pleasant surprise. I mean, better than some of the other guys who've been up and down so far this year. I don't think that that's the long-term solution. I don't think the Sharks will go to war against the Kings in the first round of the playoffs, which is, people, this was going to be, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we all know that, that it's... The battle right now is who's going to have the home seed. Is it going to be us or is it going to be LA? And it's critical,
mm-hmm.
critical that we have home ice.
I agree.
For just the plain reason that we can't win down there right now.
Yep.
A win in Florida, Al Stalock gets the shutout, dude.
Yeah. And, LA, you know, I thought Florida was going to be absolutely just god-awful. They weren't quite as bad as I expected. Calgary was actually worse than I expected, but Florida wasn't quite as bad as I expected, but the Sharks played really well. Seems like they tighten up a little bit with Stalock behind them.
Yes.
And you know, play them more as far as I'm concerned.
Totally agree with you. I mean, we've talked about this a few times that, you know, Al Stalock needs to play more than 10 games this year, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He should be playing 20 games.
That's what I'd like to see, especially since, you know, a couple of these latest, the next two games, although the Sharks won, I wouldn't say Niemi played that great in either of them, frankly.
Right. I'd play Stalock tomorrow against Winnipeg.
Sure.
I'd play him because Winnipeg is, since hiring the greatest coach known to man, Paul Maurice. They're on fire. I think they've won four in a row. They beat the Ducks last night in Anaheim, which no one had done in regulation.
Right.
They do it.
Anaheim's only regulation loss at home all season.
So if you need to tighten up against a team now that believes in themselves because of the coaching change, then you tighten up against the Jets, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because they're playing loose right now. They don't feel like they can make any mistakes. They're playing with house money. You know, they're pretty far behind in the playoff race. Not unreachable, but not likely for them. You know, they're a good 8 points out.
Oh, yeah.
Play Stalock tomorrow and see what happens. I mean, maybe the D will get a little more responsible because it certainly didn't happen against Tampa Bay where we won thanks to Pavelski's hat trick.
Yeah.
5-4.
Right, and we just basically would leave Marty St. Louis, their best player, by a country mile. We just leave him alone all over the ice. And then they get him the puck and he would score, and then the players would sort of look at each other in disbelief. Yeah, guess what this guy has done for the last 15 years in the NHL?
Yeah.
Scores like a freaking madman.
But he didn't make Team Canada, dude. He's no good.
Yeah.
He's no good.
It's one thing, actually, that's interesting, as an aside. My buddy and I were talking. The second and sixth highest scores in the NHL were passed over for Team Canada. Joe Thornton and Marty St. Louis.
Right.
How crazy is that?
Crazy.
So anyway, but yeah, St. Louis is every bit as good as he's ever been. I mean, the dude has got like the Brett Hull one-timer from the circle. It's a Stamkos move too, frankly. I mean, he's channeling Stamkos and Brett Hull and scoring these kinds of goals. It's ridiculous.
I hope he ends up being on that team. You know, you kind of feel for that guy.
He deserves it. Oh, my God.
I mean, for his whole story and the kind of player he is.
On the big ice, too, I can't help thinking he'd be even better. He'd be even better.
When it comes down to it, you got to think that if someone gets hurt and it's a wing position, they would take him over Bobby Ryan. Like, you got to think that he's next, right?
Well, Bobby Ryan's USA, dude.
You got to think that he's next, right, dude?
Definitely over Bobby Ryan, dude. Definitely.
A mental slip up. Somebody stop me before I choke again.
Maybe they'll take Matt D'Agostini.
Matt D'Agostini plays for which team now, dude? Trivia. Matt D'Agostini is in the NHL playing for?
Gorosk in the KHL? No, I have no idea.
The Buffalo Sabres. Dude. Yes! Make up.
You win the Matt D'Agostini trivia contest.
I made it up, dude. Make up.
Congratulations.
Let's talk about Calgary, dude.
Okay. They're terrible. Calgary is bad. They are so bad. And the reason why the Sharks just basically fell asleep even worse than they did in the Tampa Bay game against a decent team, the Sharks would have lost that game. And since Calgary is so bad, the Sharks managed to get back into it. Because the first like 5 minutes of the game, I don't think Calgary touched the puck like more than two or three times. Like the Sharks were in their zone the entire time. There was about 20 scoring chances in the first 5 minutes. Yeah. And then they didn't manage to score, and they sort of took their foot off the gas, made a bunch of mistakes. Calgary scored, and then the Sharks said, oh, crap, I guess we got to try and win this thing. And they did, again, on the back of Joe Pavelski, who almost had a hat trick. They tried to give him a hat trick with the empty net. But, yeah, I mean, not exactly an inspiring game against the Flames, but I understand a team having difficulty getting up for the Flames, who really just aren't any good. As they say, it's cold in Camilleri, minus 20.
It's a win. I mean, you take it that first game back after a road trip sometimes against a team like Calgary can be a little bit of a trap. But they did it, dude. They've got a four-game win streak. They've won 5 out of 6. I mean, you've got to be happy with how the Sharks are playing, and especially when you look at the standings and you see they've got 6 points on the Kings with a game in hand.
Yeah.
Like they're in control of that situation right now.
Absolutely.
And if they can find a way to continue to widen that gap, keep it at 6 or make it 8 by the time you get to the Olympic break, and the Sharks have to feel pretty good about that. Cuz that's the key. If they get the Kings at home during the playoffs, the Sharks will win that series.
I can't even go that far. I just think that they have a chance to win the series with home ice.
Dude?
Yeah.
Sharks have home ice on the Kings. They will win that series.
All right.
Okay?
Sounds good.
Dude?
I appreciate it.
I know what I'm talking about.
Optimism.
Bobby Ryan for Team Canada, dude.
Team Canada, Bobby Ryan.
If I don't have all the credibility in the world right now,
maybe we can get Semin off for Team USA.
Hey, Alexander Semin, he got the call up to Slovakia.
All right.
Russia, he did get the call for Russia.
Oh, he did get the call for Russia.
He got the call.
That was one guy got hurt or something. Yeah, all right, dude. What else do we have here?
Well, dude, Dan Boyle, article about Dan Boyle's recovery after his concussion was, I don't know, actually, I found it to be
alarming.
far worse than I had hoped it was.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who didn't read it, it was a very compelling read. And interesting to hear a player during the season open up that much and be that honest about how he was feeling and where he is now.
Like what kind of symptoms he had and all this kind of stuff. And I guess he chose to open up to David Pollock because he's feels like he's over those symptoms at this point. But clearly he was suffering effects for quite a period of time after he was playing again.
Right.
He said, basically, in retrospect, he shouldn't have come back so early.
And maybe if we go back and look at the games that he struggled, it maybe makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah.
I mean, people who didn't read it, you should. But I'm talking about how he slept all day and then he didn't sleep at all. He didn't eat.
Yeah.
To go from that to extremes to feeling disoriented after games, you know, just
it's amazing to me that someone can suffer those kinds of symptoms and still be able to play in a professional sports league. Like I have a hangnail and I'm on my back for 2 weeks, you know, in comparison.
Oh, dude.
And this guy basically, he says, oh yeah, I'm sleeping 1 or 2 hours a night, difficulty eating, but he's still going to go out and play against some of the best hockey players in the world.
He's a freaking warrior, dude.
I know. I mean, it's insane. Yeah, it's insane.
If you haven't already developed strong respect for Dan Boyle, I mean, you read that article and you see where he is right now. And I mean, guy's a man, dude. I mean, and his story is not alone. I mean, there's several other players in the NHL that have gone through similar things that we probably just don't know the whole story.
I'm sure there's lots, unfortunately.
How these guys, you know, have to battle through injuries and concussions.
Scott Hannon.
To get back, right. And I'm grateful for his health. And, you know, he's an important part of what this team does. And actually, I mean, you know, after we were talking about last week about the curtailing of his minutes, I mean, you look at some of the games, I think, from this last week, I mean, he's not playing the 6th most minutes on the team anymore. You know, his minutes are starting to rise a little bit, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
As his health improves, So will the amount of time that he's on the ice.
And I was trying to notice when he was on the ice, you know, the last, you know, certainly against Calgary at home, when he was on the ice with who, those kind of situations. Of course, you know, when you're in the stands, you can't pay attention to how many minutes he's playing. It's impossible to keep track of that. But I noticed, I mean, he was playing a lot with the fourth line. He was playing, you know, obviously with Matt Irwin. It's not like he was playing sheltered minutes. I don't think he was out there on the PK very much, but obviously he was playing the power play quite a bit. And he was playing against, you know, some pretty tough competition, and certainly with not necessarily with the Sharks' elite forwards. So clearly the coaching staff still trusts him to go out
there. Of course. Of course they do.
And play at a high level. They're not just going to, like, give him only offensive zone draws and only play him with Joe Thornton on the power play.
I don't think he's at that point in his career. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing, like I said, that if he's playing a few less minutes now and they're saving it up for April, May,
yeah,
I mean, they're going to need him in May and June if they're still playing.
Oh, yeah.
They need him. Yeah, and if you want to save some tread on the tire till then do it. And they're fortunate. I mean, the Sharks are fortunate. You've got Jason Demers and Justin Braun playing really well.
Yeah.
And Vlasic at an Olympic level.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Stewart's doing okay. You know, Scott Hannon is serviceable. Matt Irwin is another question.
Yeah.
That, you know, where are you with him right now? I mean,
he's better than Tennyson.
Do we know that? I mean, Tennyson didn't even get a chance to play when he was up here. Now we have Taylor Doherty up here, which I think we both agree he's not up here to play.
Mm-hmm.
He's up here to watch.
He's up here in case something happens.
Right.
Essentially.
So I think Hannon is out again, right?
Yeah, he's got a concussion from that.
Oh, yeah.
From
yeah.
that Cleary chicken
right,
wing.
Right. That's right.
And he's still not happy about it, which is great. I like that. I mean, it's a cheap play from what Cleary did. I mean, there's no reason for him to do that. It doesn't really make any sense. Cleary's just sort of skating by. He could have easily beaten Hannon to the corner and gotten the puck, but he just stuck his elbow out and just made a really reckless play and hit Hannon right in the jaw, and he got concussion symptoms maybe a day or so later, and he's out. And it's just, you know, I understand hard hits and sometimes they cause concussions, and those are ethically and morally a gray area, but this isn't. This is just, it's just, I don't understand why he didn't get supplemental discipline for that.
So with the Olympic break coming up, I mean, there's been discussion that there really are two trade deadlines this year. There's the deadline before the break,
mm-hmm.
and then the roster freeze. And then, you know, after the break, I think there's like 10 days before the actual trade deadline.
Right.
We've seen Doug Wilson be very proactive in the past.
Mm-hmm.
If he believes that there's a need to fill on this team, do you think it's more likely to happen before the Olympic break or at the regular trade deadline?
I think before.
Uh-huh.
Because I think he would want to use... I don't know what the rules are in terms of practices and, you know, can players work with coaches during the break and this whole thing. I'm not really sure if there's rules, you know, union rules or otherwise. But I'm sure, you know, in terms of if you want to bring a guy up to speed, you know, personally, getting him a place to stay, getting him somewhat knowledgeable about the city, you know, getting him familiar with his surroundings, it's much better to try and trade for him before the Olympic break so you can have that orientation.
Right.
If you just trade for him in March and it's like, okay, we got 8 more games, you're playing, now we're going to the playoffs, and, you know, then it really looks like a rental situation, which maybe that's what Doug Wilson's looking for. I don't know if he's looking for a rental, but it's never really been his style.
Well, I don't know, dude. He does trade for UFAs often. I mean, he did last year. He traded for two guys who could have been rentals, and Hannon and Torres, and he got them both to stay. I mean, that's sort of like his thing. It's like, you know, a UFA, because they won't come here normally.
Right.
Right? So you've got to bring them here and show them how great it is, and then hopefully they stay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I went on my soapbox about Dave Bolin last week. Now the Leafs have won 6 in a row, and that's not going to happen.
No.
You know, that the Leafs are evidently still in it to win it. And not that they're going to win anything, but they're in it to make the playoffs.
Sure.
So they're not going to get rid of, you know, one of the best third line centers in the game, but could the Sharks be trolling around for, you know, we brought up name like Vern Fiddler, you know, could they be trolling around for a guy like that? Is he even useful enough anymore? Where's our Dallas Stars fan? I want to hear from you. on about Vern Fiddler. That's what I want to know. Is Vern Fiddler still a useful third line center in the NHL?
Or is he just a guy who does a mean Kevin Bieksa impression?
Is he viable for this team?
Yeah.
You know?
It's a good question.
It's a good question because I think the Sharks have a trade piece in Matt Irwin that might be interesting to some teams. I mean, he's signed, right, for another year. It's not terrible. He's a young player. You know, he's shown some potential. Could you get a decent bottom six player for Matt Irwin? Because I think he might be expendable, dude, if Hannon is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, you know, they had Tennyson up here. Now they're taking a look at Taylor Doherty. I mean, why are they doing that? Like, why is he here now? I mean, like, hanging out. Like, they're just taking a look.
They want Tennyson to play some games in Worcester. They don't want him just sitting on his butt for the for a month.
Might it make sense that they want to see him, like, live in practice? Like, they want to see, you know, how does this guy look with our guys at practice? Like, does he look like he can hang? If we trade some depth at this position and give up Matt Irwin, are we comfortable with Taylor Doherty being the seventh guy?
That's the question.
I mean, like, I think those are things that are being evaluated right now.
Because
if you're looking at the Sharks from their position of strength, what's their position of strength right now? They really only have one thing, and that is an extra defenseman in Matt Irwin that they could offer. And that's about it, besides that second-round pick.
Yeah.
You know, so just thought, dude. Dude, what did you think about the line brawl in Vancouver?
I mean, it's not that common anymore, obviously, in the NHL. It used to happen much more. I'm not really sure what was there some backstory to this thing? I don't really understand like why Bob Hartley decided to put the goons out to start the
Well, this is what Bob Hartley said, from what I understand. He said these guys scored a goal the last game, and this was a reward for them playing well.
Yeah.
And, you know, supposedly Tortorella saw what the lineup was, decided that he had no choice but to counter with his, you know, fourth line. And I guess what got everybody upset was that Kevin Westgarth, who is not a center, was lined up at center.
Right.
And that was the sign that there was zero intention of taking a regular shift.
Kevin Westgarth scored his first goal of the year against the Sharks.
That he wasn't there to take the draw.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's when we saw Bieksa come up and take the draw. He tapped out you imagine being, there's a rookie in his first NHL game out there in the middle of all this, looking around, going,
looking up at Kevin Westgarth,
going,
who's not a small person.
Oh my God, what's happening? And Bieksa taps him on the shoulder and says, "You're out.
I wish our team colors were brown.
I'm going to match my pants." And Bieksa there to take the draw. Neither of them make an attempt to play the puck, and the gloves drop, and eight of them get ejected. Really,
right?
The stupidest part was when Tortorella tried to get the dressing room.
That's obviously the thing that made it the most newsworthy. I think if this was just a line brawl, we would have seen it, you know, for a couple days in the hockey press. But you know, I watched PTI, and the fact that Torts goes to the locker room in the break—that's the thing that leads, right?
And he's an idiot. Yeah. I mean,
what's he gonna
accomplish? What if he gets in the room? He gets like three steps in the room before Brian McGrattan punches his lights out.
Yeah,
like, what?
Seriously,
what's gonna happen here? Like,
what does he honestly think will happen?
I think he was most pissed that like he's like screaming. He's going Patrick Waugh, right?
Yeah.
And instead of yelling back, Bob Hartley is like standing there like, you know, the wax museum.
Yeah, like the Mona Lisa.
Trousseau, with his arms folded, like, I can't hear. La, 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 la. I can't hear you. It was stupid. Like, it was this, like, extra theatrics, right?
Yeah. I don't understand Torts at all.
So if you were Todd McClellan, or you're the coach of the Sharks, and let's say that on Monday night, the Flames did the same thing. They start McGrattan and Westgarth and goon number three.
Yeah.
And you go, who am I starting? Who are you putting out there?
You You put out Joe.
Yes. Yes.
You put out Joe and kill him.
You put out Joe and Burns and Pavelski and score a goal.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what you do.
And, I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, what are they going to do? Like, jump Joe?
If they jump Joe, he's getting a 2-5 and a 10 right there.
If they jump Joe, they're getting a 2-5 and a 10, plus they'll get suspended.
Right.
They'll get suspended. And do you run the risk of your top line getting hurt? Sure, but that wasn't going to happen if they put out the Sedins.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, maybe the Sedins.
It's just the whole thing was so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Tortorella got 2 weeks.
Right.
Which he deserved. He's an idiot.
I think he had a vacation planned. He did it on purpose.
What a moron.
Yeah, he's going to the Bahamas. It's too cold.
Dude,
what else we got?
We got a couple trades this week. You know, Oilers shaking things up, dude.
Thank God they got Ben Scrivens. Now everything's going to fall into place.
What do you think of the Dubnyk-Hendricks trade?
They got a bad contract. That Hendricks contract is bad. I mean, it's a good contract if you're trying to make the salary floor, but it's bad in every other case. I mean, Hendricks has what, like 4 points or something all year? And he's making $3 million.
Yeah.
He's not Manny Malhotra. I mean, it's a bad deal. He's got 3 or 4 more years left, too. That's a terrible contract.
It's a bad trade for a bad team to be making. The Oilers aren't Matt Hendricks away from being a playoff team. You know?
Not close.
Like, if you're a team like, I mean, I can't really think of your team like the Kings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle Clifford goes down and you need a fourth liner and, you know, Matt Hendricks is out there. I mean, Matt Hendricks is I'm going to phrase this carefully, a good NHL fourth line player.
Right.
Effective as that guy for 8 minutes a night, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have a similar contract and a similar kind of guy in Adam Burrish at $1.7 million.
The price, though, of Matt Hendricks. Is Matt Hendricks making like $3 million?
No, he's making 1.7.
Oh, okay.
But he's making, he's got 3 more years on his deal.
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
It's just,
it's not that dissimilar.
No, it's like, you know, how does that help your team? I mean, right now it just
doesn't help the Oilers at all.
No, it doesn't. And they're picking up half of Dubnyk. Like, it's just,
they clearly
stupid.
Just wanted him out of town,
I guess. And I mean, I don't know. Couldn't you just take in a pick for him instead of having to take on
salary?
3 years of salary. Just stupid.
It's hard for me to believe that there was no other teams in the NHL that would want Devan Dubnyk, even as like a backup or a number three.
Let's look at the list. I mean, we've got the standings up here. I mean, which of these teams are looking for goalie right now? I mean, you look at the teams at the Atlantic. I mean, none of them are looking for a goalie.
Yeah.
You look at the teams in the Metro. None of those. I mean, the Capitals have some goalie problems.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they are. Maybe the Islanders.
Yeah.
All right. So you had two teams there, but clearly they weren't interested enough, or they didn't have like the right crappy players signed to a bad contract that they always wanted. You look at the Central. None of those teams.
No.
I mean, you know, the Jets have a weird goalie situation with Pavlik, right? I mean, he's overpaid and not that good, but I mean, they're committed to him. And in the Pacific, Calgary has a terrible goalie situation.
But you're not going to trade in the division.
You're not going to trade within the division. And the only other team I see there that needs a goalie is Edmonton. And they solved that by trading for Ben Scrivens.
Yeah. I don't know enough about Ben Scrivens. I think, you know, my gut reaction to that trade was that's a slight improvement over Devan Dubnyk. But
is it? I mean, it's hard to know. Like, Ben Scrivens doesn't have the NHL experience than Devan Dubnyk does. I mean, Dubnyk's probably played a significant amount of more games than Scrivens. I mean, the thing that Scrivens has over Dubnyk is that Dallas Eakins was his coach with the Marlies.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously Eakins can't wait to lose with Scrivens. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, if we're going to lose, I want to lose with my guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, things have clearly changed since adding Scrivens. They've lost 2 in a row. So the other trade that happened today was the Rangers trading Delzato finally.
Yeah. They traded
to Nashville for Kevin Kline. Love his performance in Cyrano.
Yeah, he was good. He was good in that. And, I mean, Fish Called Wanda.
Oh, classic. One of the best. The last true comedic performance to win the Academy Award.
Kevin Kline.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right?
Good trivia, dude.
Oh.
Yeah, Kevin Kline. You know, he's 29. He's got a number of years left on his deal. I understand the Rangers need to get rid of Delzato, but again, that was something I couldn't help but think they could have gotten something more than that.
Well, they got.
I mean,
Sharks.
I mean, I would take him for. I would give more than Kevin Kline, I think.
Well, what's the equivalent of Kevin Kline on the Sharks roster?
There isn't really one right now. I mean,
would you have traded Justin Braun for Michael Delzato?
Yeah. See, I don't think that's an equivalent. Justin Braun's coming up. Kevin Kline's 29, and he's basically where he is.
Oh, maybe so, we don't have the equivalent. Yeah. Or like what? I mean, they clearly wanted an established NHL player who doesn't need any growing time. He's mm-hmm. going to step right in and be part of that team and do what he does, which is block shots and, you know, have the occasional offensive outburst to be Kevin Kline-y.
Yeah, in the occasional Shakespearean performance.
I mean, Delzato, if he pans out in Nashville, certainly is the kind of player that they need.
Oh, absolutely. That's the player they need, I think. It's a good deal for Nashville.
Shocking, actually, because Nashville usually is on the turd end
of a
trade.
They're on the hind end of most of these.
I guess if I like the trade for either team, I don't hate it for either, but I guess I like it more for Nashville.
I think they got the better player, probably. But I guess the Rangers lost patience with him, or I guess Vigneault didn't like him and scratched him a bunch, which is strange because I thought Vigneault loved offensive players. So,
and there's something not right there.
Yeah.
There's something not working out. So
maybe so.
They chose to go with, you know, the lower level player that gives them a little more consistency.
I got to see if we have emails. I can't remember.
I don't think so.
No?
Yeah, the Sharks win and everyone goes silent.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Wait,
where? No.
Here we go. There's an email right up there at the top. Looks like it just came in.
Just came in.
Hot off the press.
Like,
from Eric. We haven't read it yet. Here we go.
Dudes, or should I say YouTube sensations.
Ah.
Reading about the Doherty call-up, I was struck by how I always thought of the call-ups as depth moves rather than what it clearly is, the bonus vacation. The bonus vacation is where your job sends you to a warmer climate and gives you a per diem that is 10 times your salary, which you are allowed to save or invest. You are, however, required to do the most relaxing part of your job. Taylor Doherty, enjoy your bonus vacation. Am I right? I'm right. In other news, imagine adding this line to an already competitive NHL team, Hurdle, Couture, Torres. It wouldn't hurt so bad if I thought Hurdle was actually coming back this year. When healthy, this is easily the deepest forward group in Sharks history. Oh, a question. Why is Dustin Brown such an a-hole?
This is a great email.
Yeah, I like the rambling nature of it. And then he concludes, I think if we add to our team at the deadline, we add on D, which team is getting our second round pick this year?
Interesting.
See, interesting, because you just said that D is the one thing that we're deep at. Yeah, I don't think we're going to add on D. That just doesn't sound right to me.
Well, I think it depends on what's out there. I mean, they got a deal on Scott Hannon. I could totally see that happening again. Like, if the right kind of player came available...
Mm-hmm.
You know, on their UFA.
Eric Brewer.
Well, I mean, somebody like, well, he's making way too much money.
Right.
I mean, I'm talking about a guy who's making, you know, under
$2 million.
I mean, under, he's got to be a million and under kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're talking about, I can't even think of a good example, dude. Somebody who is a depth guy and would play in an emergency, and if someone got hurt in the Stanley Cup, you know, Western Conference Finals, mm-hmm. you wouldn't feel so bad about putting in this guy mm-hmm. over Matt Tennyson, right?
Yeah, I think that's possible.
Possible, and we're talking like a sixth. I mean, like, they gave up a sixth for Scott Hannon, right? That's the kind of thing. That second is gold. I mean, that second is, you're holding on to that to get the type of player that I think could play 12 to 13 minutes in a bottom six role. I mean, I think that's the kind of guy they're going to go for. And you're absolutely right, Eric. I mean, Hurdle, Couture, Torres,
Yeah.
I mean, if they were still around and that's that, you know, additional line, Sharks don't need to add anything.
Yeah.
If they were healthy. Nothing.
And Hurdle's not coming back this year. So all we can hope for is Torres comes back in his same...
That solves a lot. Self. I mean, Torres comes back. Couture comes back. Burrish comes back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got to look at Adam Burrish almost like an addition at the trade deadline, too. You got those three guys back, and then you're not playing Hayes. You're not playing McCarthy anymore.
Right.
And you're not playing Bracken Kearns or Shepard.
I'd take Kearns over Shepard at this point.
So then you're in a different situation. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Martin, I mean, we talk about this every week. Is he just done?
I think he's just done.
Dead.
I think he's done. Kevin Kurz has said so many times that he doesn't play the way the Sharks want him to play. I mean, I guess they can't find a way to explain it to him anymore.
What is the way they want him to play? Good? Effective?
They want him to actually hit somebody occasionally, yeah. Play a little physical when he can't have the puck, and he never does. And just, it seems like if he doesn't have the puck, he's completely invisible or a liability, and that's not the way the Sharks want people to play.
Let's talk about the first part of Eric's question. Any intention to play Taylor Doherty? Any at all?
No. No.
Zero.
I think it's what you said. I think, you know, they want to see how he plays in practice and how he goes up against some of the better players, and I think it's partially because they want Tennyson to get some real games in at the AHL level again. And sure, maybe they want to throw him some dough because he's making, you know, he has to make the NHL minimum, which is prorated, you know, $550,000, which is probably, it's at least five times more than what he's making in Worcester. So, yeah, I mean, it's a nice little bonus vacation for him, and it doesn't cost the Sharks any more money than having Tennyson in the lineup. And it's just it's a little test, you know, it's a little test to see, hey, you know, if we put you in the lineup, would you quickly embarrass yourself?
Right.
The way, unfortunately, Nick Petrecki seemed to do. He played one game, and they quickly got and shuffled him out.
Yeah, I mean, so, he's...
healthy scratch, I think he is. Is he a healthy scratch?
I don't know. I mean, he's irrelevant now,
yeah,
in terms of the Sharks'
mm-hmm.
plans. He is Jay Leach.
Yes.
And maybe not even.
Not even, because he's not married to Catherine Tappan.
Oh.
Hey, now.
Hey, now.
All right, so... That was the sexist part of our show.
Dude, coming up this week, Winnipeg on fire with Paul Maurice, best coach ever. Does the honeymoon end? Tomorrow night?
It is
in
tomorrow.
San Jose?
It is tomorrow.
I don't know. I'm a little afraid of this Winnipeg team, really. I mean, I think if...
They're on the Sharks' radar, though. It's not like the Sharks are going to, like, stumble into them and go, wait a minute.
But this team's playing fast and loose, dude. I mean, yeah. They're fast and loose, and they've got some talent on that team. They're not
sure.
Bereft of talent.
No,
and
not at all.
I'll tell you, if the Sharks start Niemi, I'm a little nervous about it. Like, I could see them... coughing up some yeah. goals to this team.
Evander Kane has a way of making people look stupid.
So we'll see. Minnesota, they've been playing better lately, but they've been beating some crappy teams. If you look at who their wins are over, it's against the toilet bowl of the league. So I'm not buying their 7-3 in their last 10, dude. I'm not buying it. I think that it's a bit of a mirage. So, but they're playing better. So we got Minnesota.
Yeah.
And then, dude, L.A. L.A., dude.
That's the game.
L.A.
Why is Dustin Brown such an a-hole, dude? That's the question.
Some people are just born bad, dude.
That's right. And he flops a lot.
Yeah.
The fact that he dives a lot, I think, is not a very endearing quality.
Maybe he's a fan of the Premier League.
Maybe. Maybe he's a Southampton fan.
Flopping around all over the place.
All right, dude. Well, you know, what can we say? The Sharks are winning. They're winning on the road, and they don't have Couture in the lineup, and they're still winning.
Things are good, dude. Just really quick before we go, I want to touch on this points debate, all right?
Okay.
If you look at the standings, go back down for a second where you got the standings pulled up here. The Sharks are at 70 points, and the Ducks are at 79. So what was written, I think, by Craig Custis today on ESPN, and then, you know, I think supposedly it's going to be talked about again at the GM meetings, is some people are a little irritated that you get the same amount of points for a shootout win than you do for a regulation win. So
yeah.
It almost penalizes you for winning in regulation. Like, there's no benefit
mm-hmm.
to winning the game in regulation.
It is a tiebreaker, though.
It is a tiebreaker. If you get to that point.
Yeah.
But there might be some teams that win a ton of games in the shootout that end up ahead of you in the standings,
right.
And then you won more games of regulation and you feel like you got kind of gypped.
Right.
So the suggestion is something that they do in European leagues, which is 3 points regulation win, 2 points shootout overtime win, right?
Yeah.
No, wait. 2 points overtime win, 1 point.
1 point overtime loss and 0 point. Points for regulation loss.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So.
And then every game is a 3 point game.
Right. So if they did that right now, by my theater major math skills, Anaheim would have 113 points and San Jose would have 93. So the Sharks would be
20 points
behind instead of 9.
Right.
Which, you know, reasonably, you know, the division, unless the Ducks take a huge dump, is kind of out of reach a little bit.
Pretty much.
So it just makes it even more impossible, you know, at that point. And then LA is at 85. So is the difference that big, dude? Not really, right? I mean, like, between the Sharks and the Ducks, I mean, it's a 6-point difference. It would be 8. Vancouver would be at 81. Right now, they're at 61. There's a 4-point difference, 3-point. You know, I mean, Phoenix is at 69.
Yeah.
And now they're at 55.
I mean, it shows that Anaheim's winning more games in regulation, that's for sure.
Sure. And I guess maybe we'll only care if it affects the Sharks in a negative way. But
I wouldn't mind the 3-point system. I mean, the knock is that it makes more difficult. It's more difficult to compare teams across eras because you're talking about, oh, look at Anaheim. They got 130 points. And then you look at like the Detroit teams of the early 90s, and Detroit had 110 or 115 points, which is like one of the best records in the history of the league. And then, you know, the second place team gets 115 points.
But doesn't the shootout skew that anyways?
It skews it anyway.
You know, it still skews it anyway.
Just not as much. Just not as much,
but
as a 3-point
win. What's
the
difference? I mean, you're skewing it a little bit or you're skewing it a lot. I mean, it's the records from the olden days are not going to compare to what it is now. If it's broken, you fix it.
I think
you fix it. I don't see what's the point. You know, you're tinkering with the game anyways with hybrid icing and all this other stuff. You know, if this is something that's going to help make the best teams make the playoffs, then you fix it. You do it.
I definitely enjoy the idea of trying to get teams to go for the regulation win. You want to incentivize that.
Right.
And right now it's not incentivized. So anyway.
To the detriment of the Sharks this year, it should be, I think you're right. You make the teams play for the regulation win because so too many times you see in the last couple minutes, if a team that should not be in a game is tied, they just sort of turtle up and take the point. And,
mm-hmm. you know, and then, hey, maybe we get lucky because we have Tamas Solani or something.
Right.
You know, we got a guy who can
hope
score.
You just play for the shootout and hope you get the extra point.
Right.
And that's bogus. Bogus.
Oh. All right, dude. Well, I know we're going to do another video at some point. I don't know when, but I know we're going to do one. So it might be next week. It might not be till the week after next, but we'll be back.
48 minutes.
Soon. Yeah, see, I didn't look at the clock. I should have reined us in earlier.
No. I want to talk another 12 minutes.
No.
I've got a lot I want to talk about.
It's been a good week.
I want to talk about Devin Dubnyk's save percentage. I want to talk about Bobby Ryan. Talk about Blake Gale.
Bobby Ryan.
Show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.